From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fourth day of March 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. The guys up at Risk Pulse in Chicago will join us to discuss a very cold weather forecast for here in the United States. We'll also take a look at what's been happening in South America and maybe touch on the Australian wheat crop as well. And we'll hear all about the agricultural news, and of course I'll tell you about tomorrow's all-day ag outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We've closed the online registration, but walk-ins are welcome tomorrow morning. The cost is just $30. That's at the door. We open at 8 a.m. Central Time. You can see the agenda online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Oh, you bet. It's a great event. It's always somewhat entertaining and educational. And for those of you who are coming, we're going to bring a small token here to give to everyone that attends. It kind of helps the buy-sell process. A lot of these operations charge anywhere from $250 up to $10,000 to help make a buy-sell recommendation. But we're going to hand out a complimentary token to help you through that process, Todd.
All right. Well, that sounds fun. We'll make sure that there are plenty on hand. I know pre-registrations we closed at noon today. And we had 190, that's the actual number, all in for the program tomorrow, though I hope to push that around to 200. We'll need about 10 to 15 to walk in, because there's always about 5 or 6 that don't show up to make that number happen tomorrow. And you're welcome to show up if you're listening and you want to come over. It starts at 8 a.m. Central, 9 in the Eastern time zone, $30 in cash. And you can join us for all the fun tomorrow as well. Now, let's talk about what's happening in Chicago, because it's been interesting since the close on Friday. The president has been talking and tweeting some about getting really close to a deal with China. What do we know about that today, and what reaction did the markets have?
Well, it was optimistic. He talked about asking China to remove the tariffs. There was some wordage of lowering tariffs, so whether it's remove or lower or whatever, the enthusiasm's there that we are making some headway. In fact, there was a date thrown out of March 27th of our two leaders, our leader and their leader, getting together and maybe signing some type of a deal. But you got to remember, this is negotiations. It's on, off, so I imagine there will be maybe a breakdown at some point in time to back and fill somewhat. Probably the thing that kept the lid on the marketplace today was construction spending. There was a 0.6% decline. The economists were looking for about a 0.3% gain, and that kind of took the financials lower. The Dow was down over 400 one time. It set bonds up, and so that kind of smoothed out or slowed down the buying enthusiasm. And part of that was due to, you know, a little concern about retail sales. We just saw just not too long ago. So the concern is the economy could be slowing a little bit. So that took the sting out of it. But technically, we had a great hook reversal to the upside there on Friday. We made a new low, closed higher. We followed through here today by closing up a little bit. So that's encouraging. I know it's a long ways away, but we're in position here to record a monthly price reversal to the upside if we could maintain these gains. Short term in through here, if you do the simple retracements, back to the upside there. We've got a little room here to hopefully try to regain a little bit of what we lost here in corn and beans in the last week.
Which has the more power to the upside, and how much power really is there for corn, soybeans, and or wheat?
Well, as far as power to the upside, I think we're in a situation where we could, on corn and beans, to maybe revisit those recent highs. We still feel we're stuck sideways here. We still feel it's a trading range until we get a little closer to the acreage report and kind of see how this spring weather unfolds in through here. So we don't see a dynamic feature of a sharp up or a sharp down in through here. It's going to take some actual confirmation that Asia is going to actually buy some U.S. products. If that would happen and we happen to run into a weather concern this spring, then we got quite a bit to the upside, but we got to kind of take one step at a time. As far as what has the most potential the upside here is probably wheat. Wheat's most oversold. July wheat futures have lost over 90 cents a bushel here in the last few weeks, and we got the cheapest wheat in the world. And in fact, we've even seen maybe a little bit of export business pick up for some hard red winter wheat as these world buyers kind of shop around. We're at a little bit of a discount because of our location and freight costs, but our wheat values are attractive to the world market. And as oversold as it is, we're looking for some type of recovery. The corn wheat spread narrowed into this 80 cent level. Historically, whenever that corn wheat spread gets that narrow, you start to see that reverse the other way, Todd.
Friday, the United States Department of Agriculture at 11 o'clock will release the March WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report. Those are always based on current agricultural policies. Most have thought that we are running behind on the exports for both corn and, or at least for soybeans. Will they do any adjustments this time?
Well, I don't know if they'll make a whole lot of adjustments. We're kind of looking at this report being sort of non-eventful. We'll see what the future wordage is as we move forward in through here on that. But overall demand isn't really that bad. We did see over 105,000 tons of corn sold to Colombia. Bean sales are fairly decent, even though behind a year ago. And one thing that was brought to attention here is this container market. These containers are still leaving the United States with beans in at an aggressive pace.
Anything on the livestock side before I let you go?
Oh, yeah, you bet. One thing to consider in through here is these pork loins. These pork loins are at some historic lows. And as a consumer, if you're not interested in whole corn, beans, or whatever, you might want to shop around here and get you a pork loin and put it in your freezer, because they should be fairly good buys, and that would make a real good butterfly or pulled pork sandwich later on this summer, Todd.
Absolutely. Hey, good news for the consumers out there at this point. We'll see what the export market looks like for pork in the future. Looking forward to having you over at the Beef House tomorrow. Thanks so much for doing that.
You're welcome. See you in the morning.
We'll see you tomorrow morning. That is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. And we'll be there at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, starting at 8 a.m. Central Time. Hope you'll be there, too. Walk-ins are welcome. Yesterday, as I'm sure you already know, tornadoes raked across the southern part of the United States. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey reflects upon those tornadoes and the damage they've done and how this compares to previous years.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have our first major tornado outbreak of 2019 to talk about. And of course, if you look at the big picture, it was a four-state outbreak. It hit across parts of Alabama, Georgia, northern Florida, and even into South Carolina. And preliminary reports indicate that there could have been as many as three dozen tornadoes, although I think when they finally start piecing together tracks, that actual number will drop down. But what people will remember about this are the two tornadoes that hit Lee County in eastern Alabama back-to-back during the mid-afternoon on March 3rd. And unfortunately, reports coming in now that there are as many as 23 fatalities. And to compare that to last year, we had a near historic low number of fatalities in 2018. For the entire year, just 10 tornado-related fatalities. And in fact, we've been on a pretty steady downward trend in tornado-related fatalities since the historic 2011 year, when we had the big tornadoes not just in Alabama, but Joplin, Missouri, and the annual tornado fatality toll was 553. Since then, all years except one have seen a downward trend, and we dipped as low, as I mentioned, 10 tornado-related fatalities in 2018. We had just 18 in 2016, but we have surpassed that with just one outbreak, with just two tornadoes on one afternoon in March of 2019. Now, again, I hate to talk about stuff like this. This does become our worst tornado outbreak since April 27th and 28th, 2014. We had 34 fatalities in that two-day period, and it does look like this will be likely our deadliest tornado since one hit Cleveland County in central Oklahoma May 20th of 2013. We had 24 fatalities from that individual storm. Of course, this one in Alabama, it looks like it was two separate tornadoes. But again, you put it together and it does become a very significant tornado outbreak here early in the year in 2019.
Significant, particularly, says Rippey, because these storms were quite powerful.
Yeah, similar to the 2011 storms that seemed to strike so many populated areas in Alabama and Missouri and elsewhere, this was just an incredible outbreak with these two powerful systems. Early reports indicating at least EF3 damage on the 0 to 5 scale, but I think when some of the final reporting comes in, that those numbers might come up a little bit to 4. But nevertheless, you know, you get a tornado of a certain intensity, there's only so much you can do. I mean, you could take shelter, but if you don't have a basement or if you're in a mobile home, that's especially perilous because there is just nowhere to go to get away from a storm of this magnitude if it hits you directly. Looking ahead, we have fortunately a quiet week, although it is going to be very cold for recovery efforts here. We are looking at sub-freezing temperatures deep into the south in the day or two after this outbreak. We will be watching another storm system that will be arriving in California later this week, very similar to this system, then racing across the country. And it does look like as we move toward the end of the week, particularly into Saturday and possibly Sunday, we could be looking at another severe weather outbreak, way too far out to really pin down any details. But we are in a very active weather pattern. We've started to see spring-like conditions in the deep south, even though it's winter in many other areas of the country. And we will have to watch this intense temperature gradient and another powerful storm interacting with that for the potential of more severe weather for this weekend across the south.
Finally, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says there is a connection between the waters off the Pacific coast and tornado outbreaks across the United States.
There are some connections with what's going on in the Pacific, whether it's El Nino or La Nina, and tornado outbreaks. But this has been a pretty weak El Nino for the most part, and so I don't think we're going to see a particularly strong correlation this time. What I think is more important here is the fact that we have an intense temperature gradient. It has been so warm across the lower southeast, including the areas that got hit with the tornadoes on March 3rd. At the same time, we've got really brutal winter-like conditions across many parts of the country, especially across the plains, the Midwest. And given that temperature gradient and the active storm track coming in from the Pacific, that in itself could lend itself to a very active spring weather pattern. Now, what happened in 2018, we had a very similar setup in that a lot of the country was cold, but the position of the jet stream was much further to the east in terms of where the dip in the jet stream occurred, and that actually suppressed almost all of the severe weather in the spring of 2018. And that's part of the reason why we ended up with just 10 tornado-related fatalities last year. This year, even though we've got some of that cold air in place, we've got a more robust high or Bermuda high parked over the southeastern United States. And I think just looking at the way the forecast looks out the next couple of weeks and then likely beyond that, I think this will be a more active spring in terms of severe weather. We did not have that warmth over the southeast last year like we have this year.
That's Brad Rippey. He is a meteorologist with the United States Department of Agriculture. Our thanks go to Gary Crawford at USDA for providing the audio. Joining us now to take a look at the cash grain market is Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, can you talk to me a little bit about cash basis? In particular, I think for corn, but probably for soybeans as well, there's been some firmness. How much of this do you think is related to weather conditions across the Midwest?
I would say about half of it is related to weather conditions. You know, the barges are not able to move, so some of the end users are having to double buy by buying rail corn or corn. So in the short run, that's a little bit friendly. Long term, since they've double bought now, they don't need to buy as much later. So that's long term, that's not as quite as friendly. But in the short run, it does help out. The other thing is, with the low prices on the Chicago Board of Trade, farmers haven't been very willing sellers. They're only selling as much as what they need to pay bills and that type of thing. So lack of farmer movement, and then the transportation problems. I don't want to say strength, but probably a little bit better than normal improvement in corn basis.
Yeah, so that's what I was trying to get at. It's not a reflection of new or better demand then.
No. I would say not at all, really. We're seeing just the same export business being done to basically the same companies, same countries. So we're not really seeing a big pickup in new demand at this point yet.
So when you take that into context with how much grain you think is on the farm, in particular for corn, what does it tell us about the end of the month of March and then June, July, and August?
In my mind, it tells us that we want to make sure we have offers in and use any rallies as pricing opportunities. We're not going to run out of corn. I mean, we've got a 1.6 billion, 1.7 billion carryout, not as much as last year's 2 billion, 2.1 billion, but still, we're not going to run out of corn. And so we want to use these pricing opportunities whenever we get them, whether it's a trade agreement or a small acreage number or some concerns about spring weather, whatever it takes, we want to use those as opportunities, I think, to get old crop corn sold.
And does the South American corn crop at this point limit or help in terms of the marketplace?
I think it's too early to say for sure. I think everybody realizes that just because they're off to a good start doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to finish well. Doesn't mean they're going to finish poorly either. It's just too early to
look.
Some rains, and so they're off to a good start. It was dry there for a while for their bean crop, and that did impact their bean yields, but they're just basically getting the corn planted, so we've still got a ways to go before we can really say for sure what kind of corn crop they're going to have.
And finally, before I let you go, any thoughts on this week's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate due out Friday?
Probably more of the same. I don't think they're going to change a whole lot. I think the bigger report's going to be March 29th. I think the acreage report has a better monthly supply and demand report.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with the Andersons. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Now, pre-registration has closed for tomorrow's all-day outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We start at 8 a.m. Central Time, 9 if you're in the Eastern Time Zone. And if you want to walk in, that's fine. It's $30, but do show up at 8 o'clock. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks so much for being with us. Looks like another cold, cold week across the Midwest.
Yeah, this kind of last, winter's last hurrah here to not tap here for this. We've already seen it here in Illinois and much of the central and eastern U.S. That'll continue from now through basically Friday on into Saturday. But good news is on the horizon here. We do see a break in the Arctic flow. That break does look to take place, again, starting this upcoming weekend. And that will then result in a return of more seasonal temperatures, which then actually looks to persist across much of the, especially eastern Corn Belt, as we go through next week. Western Corn Belt could still see slightly biased and cooler than normal temperatures next week. But again, it's more due to clouds and some additional precipitation rather than this big, you know, plunge of Arctic cold, such as what we're currently seeing. And we think this is really the last really big push of Arctic air or unseasonably cold temperatures, this large spread of an area. So spring is coming soon. We just have to still be a little patient here in Illinois.
Will it bring with it rains that are still of concern? Because I think with the amount of snow that has fallen, a rain following that, most have been concerned about flooding.
Yeah, that is the concern here going forward. And, well, first off, with still the flooding across the southern U.S., where planting normally begins to start up here in the next few weeks, no early planting is expected in areas of the Delta and Southeast, as those areas remain on the active side. We have our next kind of big shot of precip, mainly in the form of rain across Illinois, coming up this weekend. The biggest snow looks to be up northwest, where it has been in recent months, centered on Minnesota and the Dakotas, which just have incredibly high amount of snow right now, very high snow water equivalent, and some of the highest snow water equivalent that we've seen in that area of the past 10 years or so. So with more snow on the way, and it's going to be a very slow melt here across those areas, yeah, that combination of high snow and with more rain on the way definitely, you know, raises concern for a continuation of flooding risk here as we go into this late winter, early spring period.
Dryness concerns have mostly been alleviated in South America. Can you check in on the Australian wheat crop?
For the Australian winter wheat crop, just starting to look ahead towards the start of the new planting season here coming up. And in last year's crop was hit hard by drought. This year looks to, that concern is still there, considering that we really haven't seen much in the way of soil moisture replenishment here over the summer. So as we go through March and on into April, they will need a significant improvement in soil moisture to really start them off in good shape.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse. I'm Todd Gleason.